I'd like to start with the subject of good posture, because everything that has to do with a skeleton starts with good posture. Thank you for sitting up straight. We tend to slump because that's the easiest thing for us to do. But we need to know what represents good posture in order that we can do it. So there are several things that we should know about how to judge ourselves. The first is the position of the head. Where should the head be when you have good posture? And maybe I could just show you, and perhaps I could get Millie. Would you come up and let me Millie also show you, so that you can see two of us doing this. Now, the first thing you want to do is to get the head in what we call the neutral position. The neutral position has a small curve of the neck. You don't want to completely get that curve out of the neck. Now, there are some people who are born with it out. Those individuals are, they're special. And they are not to be, they should not confuse what I'm saying for them. You will recognize them as having a straight spine from the head down to about the middle of the thoracic area. But what we want here is to locate the cheek and the collarbone, and they should be right over each other. Millie almost gets it. Now, you may think, when you can see that she doesn't quite get it, you may get to thinking, well, if I were up there, I would show a perfect profile. But it's a rare person who has a really good profile. And in order to do that, you need to bring the whole head back, chin and everything, bring it back just a little bit, and now you can see that the front part of her cheek is just about level with the front part of her collarbone. You will need someone to help you with this. And when you first begin to do it, you feel as if you're actually leaning backward, you know. But it takes a while for the muscles to know just where the proper position is. And the chin should be in, but not tucked in. It should just be in. It also should be in the neutral position, not jutting upward, nor tucked in too much, because if it's tucked in too much, that puts a strain on the upper neck, as you can feel when you do it that way. Now, once you've got the head in its proper position, then the proper position for the shoulders. And Millie, you stand and face them. And here is what you can do when you're seated where you are now. Just bring your elbows up to shoulder height, just like this. And then bring your elbows back and touch them together in the back. Can you do that? Touch them together right back there in the back. Touch them. Okay. Do that again. Just touch them together while holding your arms pretty much level at shoulder height. Now, you can see, if you'll notice, you're pulling your chest muscles. You're pulling the pectoral muscles. Do you feel that a little bit? Feel a little pull in your pectoral muscles there. Most women in particular get a contraction in the pectoral muscles. But if you will do this and now bring them on around and drop them down at your sides like this, and the position that your shoulders are in, so far as they're being back, that's good. And try to get the most of us round our shoulders up like this so that the shoulder points forward. It should point to the side like this. That means holding it in that direction, holding it there. You can hold it there until the muscles get so that they naturally hold it there. And people who are in the military, they get accustomed to holding it. And we've had some military people here who have not been in the military for 20 years. And still, when you see them, their shoulders point right straight out this way. And so that's a good thing. But now a lot of us will get the shoulders up that way, back that way, but we bring them up like this. Well, that squeezes the top part of the chest, so they have to be relaxed. Relaxed and down and back. That's the proper position for the shoulders. Now, if you will do this customarily, this will go far toward keeping you from getting humpbacked, do you see? So that's a proper position, and women are very prone to getting humpbacked, and we want to avoid that if we can. Now, once you've done that, then the next thing is the arch of the back. Now, we have, most of us, been taught that that arch should be as nearly ironed out as possible, and I went through college doing that. You remember how we'd get up against the wall and try to iron out that curve there? Well, as you will be taught in your next class on how to take care of the back by Brother Irvin Wells, who is a physical therapist, he will teach you what is good about the back, how to have the back in a neutral position. So I won't talk too much about that except for to pave the way for him. He will not be talking with you about staying too much in this position, because this position is not the best position for the back. It needs to be in what we call the neutral position. Now, you can go far toward getting the back with its natural curve, with its normal curve, what is normal for you. And everybody is a little different. They're built a little different. There are some people whose hips stick out a lot farther when they're in the neutral position than other people's hips. If you're the kind of person whose hips stick out in the back, that is fine. That's the way you're built, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's not going to give you a backache to have your back in its natural and neutral position. But one thing that you can do is to relax the knees, and that's done this way. This is a relaxation of the knees. Now, we don't want them so that we're having to hold the muscles tight to keep the knees, but we don't want them locked backward in the hyperextended position. That isn't helpful for the knees. So that's just have them in the neutral position, not locked back, not bent forward so much that you have to hold the muscles in order to hold yourself up. Just in the neutral, relaxed position, straight up and down like that. All right, we've got everything down to the knees. Now we need to get the feet. Millie, if you'll turn that way and show people the proper foot position. The proper foot position is not pronated like this. Now, a lot of people walk pronated. Arches are flat. And some people walk on the sides of their shoes like this. That is more correct than the other, but that still isn't quite the neutral position. We want to walk on the outsides, but not with them actually turned so that you're walking on the outsides of your feet like this. Okay. Now, if you will do that, if you will take this position, you can stand for hours with no fatigue except in your feet, and they will get a little tired. If you just shift your weight a little bit from foot to foot, that can enable you to stand for hours or to walk for hours. Thank you, Millie. That represents good posture, and I have a counseling sheet, and I would like for these to be distributed, if I may. Hope I brought enough for everybody. If not, we'll get some more. Now, the next thing I'd like for you to know about is that of the kind of exercise you need. And I have a sheet here called Jogging, Not the Best for All People. Would you mind helping me with this? And be sure that everybody gets one. If there are any left, would you please save those for me? And then I have another one. And by the way, you know how to hand out papers when you're handing out sheets? Do it this way. Always the people who do the handouts, do them this way so that they will, and then you can just flip them up. You can flip them with your thumb like this and count off the right number, or you can take them like this. But never lick your fingers when you're going to pass out. Never do that.
One more.
Because we need one more down here. Because in this age of AIDS, we need to learn the most perfect hygiene for people. Now, I want you to also know about what exercise is the very best for people and what exercise can do for you. Do we run out of the jogging ones? All right. And Those of you who did not get the jogging ones, remember that you didn't get the jogging ones. And that way I can bring a few more for those who didn't get the jogging one. Briefly, I can tell you my thoughts on jogging, and that is that jogging is not the best exercise, certainly not for women, unless you happen to be the kind of woman who has been jogging since you were 8 years old. You've jogged every day. And you know that jogging is good for you. You've done it thousands of times and you feel comfortable with it. Then that is fine. When I was a young girl growing up on the farm, I jogged every day. It was my joy to run. And I remember one time my uncle drove the school bus to pick up all the rural children and take them to the consolidated school. And one morning, all of a sudden, the school bus wouldn't start. So my uncle, my brother, and I were the first ones to get on the school bus. So when we went to my uncle's house, just across the road from us, we went up there to get on the bus, and my uncle said, "Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do." Nobody had phones. There were no telephones in the rural areas at that time. So he said, "How am I going to notify everybody?" And I said, I'll run around and tell everybody. And so I left my books and I ran the route and told everybody on the school bus route that he wasn't coming, that the school bus was broken down and they'd have to take their own cars and take their children into the school. And ran the whole route, all the way around, and got to the school. But I don't jog anymore. I spent probably 20 years that I didn't jog. I'm not going to start now. I don't believe it would be the best exercise for me, because for so many years I didn't. And women who began jogging after they have not been jogging for a while, they have a great problem with it. They may lose their menstrual periods. They may have excessive menstrual bleeding. They may bleed between their periods. They may have kidney bleeding. Men can do all of this too, except those things having to do with menstruation. They can have kidney bleeding. They can have digestive complaints, peptic ulcers they can get, shin splints and heel pain. All of these are things that they can get from jogging. So jogging, in my opinion, is not for everybody, only for those who've done it all their lives and feel very comfortable with it. Yes? Can it cause breast cancer? I don't know about that. I don't know that I've seen any. If a person gets breast cancer, jogging might make it spread more. We know that you remember how, any of you nurses remember how we used to do the surgical scrub for people who are going to have a mastectomy? You remember how we'd take a long sponge forceps and we'd get three or four sponges on that and we'd dip it in and we'd really go after it like this and the breast would just be shaking like this all over. And I always looked at that, don't know whether that's the best or not. Well, you know, there have been some tests done showing that these vigorous scrubs that we used to do where the breast just was being shaken all over the chest, that there are more recurrences in women who have that kind of scrub as compared to a very gentle scrub that does not displace the breast at all. And so there's a lesson in that. The human body is to be treated delicately. It is true that we are tough, but we should treat the body delicately. We should not force it nor in any way overstep what we can recognize is the safe way to treat the body. All right, now I have another one that I want to distribute to you. This one is called The Advantages of Useful Labor as Exercise. And I really believe that useful labor has many advantages over just calisthenics or or something that you contrive, even bicycle riding, which I believe in under certain circumstances as an exercise. I think it is a very good one. However, it is a contrived exercise. Generally, if you want to take an exercise hike, you just say, well, I'm going to go to a certain place and then I'm coming back. Well, you have no purpose in going to that place except to get exercise. It's better than doing exercise indoors, it is true. But it's nothing like as good as the exercise that we can get from doing some kind of purposeful labor. So purposeful labor is my general way of getting exercise if I have it available. On my recent tour to Australia and New Zealand, I had no opportunity for useful labor except for one time. And one time I was in a home and the lady had a garden in her yard. And I said, are you going to do some work in your garden? She said, oh, no, I'm going to take you for a walk. And I said, I'd be happy to help you in the garden. Oh, no, I would never let you work in my house. I want you to enjoy yourself. And I said, there is nothing on this earth that I would rather do than help you in your garden. She said, do you really mean that? And I said, I love gardening. I love it lots more than I like walking. I don't particularly like just walking, but I'd love to help you in the garden. And so we spent about 3 hours working in her garden. It was the most enjoyable exercise that I had during the whole 6 week tour. And I recommend that to you, and it's at all possible for you to have that. Now, the first of the disorders that I'd like to talk with you about is that of TMJ. TMJ, that's temporomandibular joint syndrome. It's pain in the jaw or in the joint here. The patient may perceive it as a headache. And they may tell you, I've got a headache. And that headache may be temporomandibular joint pain. Are there things that we know that can make them develop that? Yes, there are. One thing is an unequal skeleton. This has been shown in some observations that have been made on patients with TMJ, that is a problem. One hip higher than the other. Children being started doing some kind of industrial work, like driving a car with the foot way forward like this, which tilts the pelvis and makes can make one leg shorter than the other when they reach far for the accelerator pedal. This kind of thing can be a problem that can throw the skeleton off. Carrying heavy books with one arm so that one shoulder gets pulled down, or sometimes they pull that shoulder up where they're carrying the heavy load and that shoulder goes up instead of going down. The back better developed on one side than the other because they carry a heavy bucket. Maybe they have a paint bucket, and they carry the heavy bucket in one side, and they are painting with the other, but they hold this bucket. Well, that will they get a counterbalancing hypertrophy of the muscles on the opposite side. So you pick up over here, you counterbalance over here, so you have to relax on this side, so the back muscle on the side where they're lifting the weight will relax, and those on the other side contract. That gives them an imbalanced back, and they may get skeletal imbalance from that, which can result in TMJ or a twisting of the. You know how when you're doing something hard, you'll often twist the mouth a little bit to make it agree with the work that you're doing. Well, in some people, they do this with the jaw, and that gives them an imbalanced jaw and temporomandibular joint syndrome. So the first thing that you should do with a person who has a skeletal problem is examine the back, examine the hips, examine the shoulders, look at the feet and see if they are all pretty well balanced. If they are not, give corrective exercises. I remember one time I was having some pain in my upper back, and it was really annoying me. And I met a good chiropractor on one of our tours, and I said, "Do you mind answering a skeletal problem for me? I've got this pain in my back, and I don't know what to do for it. Can you do something for my back or tell me what to do that can correct it?" He said, "Sure." And he said, "Turn around." So I turned my back to him, and he just ran his hand up and down my spine. He said, "Which side do you carry your briefcase on?" And I said, "Well, I always carry it with my right hand." He said, "I thought so." He said, "You need to pick it up every time with your left hand so that you can build some muscles over here on the other side." I did that. My back pain disappeared within a week, and I've never had it since. So work on getting a balance in the skeleton. That can be of great help to you. Now, TMJ is not solely caused by skeletal imbalance. TMJ is also caused by food sensitivities and allergies. A lot of people who have food sensitivities will contract muscles, and this causes a problem. It can cause pain in joints, and it can also cause a pain in the jaw. They can grind the teeth, and tooth grinding or bruxism can be a part of this total syndrome. A lot of people with TMJ brux. And what can you do for a person who bruxes? You can find out what foods they are sensitive to and remove those from their diet, and that will usually stop the bruxing, or at least help it a lot. It must take a lot of muscle force to grind the teeth. Would you grind your teeth right now so that I can hear it up here? Would you do that? You can't do it, can you? But you can hear a person who is a tooth grinder all over their house. It takes a lot of force. Well, that means there is a lot of stress on the jaw when they do that. And the tightness of the muscles that comes about from a sensitivity or an allergic phenomenon, either one of those, may be the very thing that's causing their temporomandibular joint syndrome. Now, let's take our next problem as being foot pain. Now, some of you have found people who have pain in the bottom of the foot that causes them to be almost lame. They can hardly walk because of the pain in the foot. Sometimes it's just right by the heel, but sometimes it involves the entire sole. They may have pain when they're just seated in a classroom, and they have to pull off the shoes because the bottoms of the feet hurt. For these individuals, they need a stretching exercise. And you can build a little platform for them. I wonder if I could get a couple of men to just bring the chalkboard around for me so that I can get to it a little better. The type of thing that you need to do for individuals who have this kind of, we might call it plantar fasciitis. Plantar, P-L-A-N-T-A-R, meaning the bottom of the foot. Plantar fasciitis is a problem that can be treated by hot soaks. I think if you just leave it down there, it might be better for us. That's good right there, and I think that's perfect right there. Very good. You can give them hot and alternating cold soaks for the feet. F-A-S-C-I-I-T-I-S, fasciitis. Hot and cold soaks. And if they've got a corn or a bunion, you can treat that at the same time, because after they have soaked the foot in the hot water for half an hour, or alternating hot and cold, then you can often, just with the fingernail, just get a little purchase on their corn and pull it off, or take a sharp pointed scissors, and just trim around a little bit so that you can get your fingernail under to just shell it right off. But the type of slant board that a person needs is this kind of thing. Let's say that here is the wall, and they can put the little slant board right up next to a wall, and it's done like this. Just put the board there and make it at a 45-degree angle, just like that, and have the person to... It's not a 45-degree angle. Does anyone know what the angle is of the slant board? It's maybe more like 20 degrees. Just not very great. It's not 45, which would be, what, about there, wouldn't it? About maybe 30. This is about 30. All right, then what you do with that is just to stand on this facing the wall and put your toes up on the slant board. At first, the person may just be able to put the toes on the slant board. Then they get a little bit farther up, and finally they can stand on it entirely and stand on it for 5 minutes, or even 1 minute can be of great help. And it should be done 3 times a day at least for 1 minute each time. And this can be a great help. Now, for people who really have a lot of pain, they may have to start without the slant board. They just start by standing a little way from the wall and leaning the chest into the wall while keeping the heels flat on the floor. They may start at 6 inches. That may give them a little pain. Start at 6 inches, lean into the wall, put the chest right on the wall, keeping the heels flat on the floor. Then day by day, they try to move back a few inches and lean farther into the wall. But each time they put the chest on the wall, keep the heels flat on the floor. This can help with plantar fasciitis, but don't expect overnight results. Sometimes it takes a year for them to get rid of it. There are some foot exercises. Picking up a pencil with the toes of both feet, curling them under, and actually picking it up. Once they get so they can pick up the pencil, then have them walk on the heels while holding the pencil in their toes. That's a real acrobatic trick, but it can help a lot. Then another thing is walking on tiptoe. Just have them walk around in their stocking feet or with shoes on if they prefer. If they don't feel comfortable in stocking feet. They should be on carpets if they're in the stocking feet. It's better for the toes if they're just in their stocking feet or barefoot. Walk around for several minutes. That can be helpful. And if a person does some of the housework, just walking around like this. And if it's a man, enlist him in some housework on his tiptoes. Maybe he could wash some windows on his tiptoes, and that would be very good. Be certain that your shoes give your toes plenty of room. And the ideal shoes are those shoes that will actually give you room to separate your toes a little bit like this. And you know that you've got plenty of room in there. There's some air that can circulate between your toes. Women's shoes are notoriously too snug for the best of health. Then another exercise for the feet is walking on the outsides of the feet. Just walk like this. Just walk around on the outsides of the feet with the feet supinated. This is pronated. This is supinated. Then to rock forward and backward and forward and backward. This is a good exercise for the feet. Again, being sure that you don't pronate the feet as you go back and forth. Just back and forth, that's a very good one. Then another one is crossing the feet and separating your toes with the feet crossed. First one side, then on the other side. That's a very good one. Then picking up a marble with between the toes, especially between the great toe and the toe next to it. That's a very good exercise for the feet as well. Now the next problem is that of sciatica. Sciatica is a pain in the sciatic nerve which comes out of the spine and goes down the leg all the way down, splits, sends off several major branches, goes all the way down to the foot. And it, some of the branches come around to the side, some go on the inside, some go right down the back of the leg. And you can get pain anywhere that the sciatic nerve has its branches, but often the person can tell that it begins in the hip and goes down through the thigh and right on down past the knee. And some people will get it right on down to the ankle, sometimes with hot spots along the way, one or two. They can be disabled by it. There's a very simple exercise that you can give people who do not have a highly flared up sciatic pain. If they've got really flared up sciatic pain, nobody's going to have to tell them not to make a side-to-side movement. They already know that they can't make a side-to-side movement. But if you're if the person you're treating does not have an acute sciatica, only has some chronic pain, or from time to time they get pain, then teach them how never to get an acute flare-up. Just put them at a door so that they are standing close to a door, and I'll see if I can't show you how it's done. You stand with the feet approximately 2 feet from the wall. Then you can let your shoulder go past the door like this, or you can do your hand like this to hold yourself. But remember that both feet are over there at the 2 foot mark, and then this hip is put into the wall just like this while standing at the 2 foot mark with your feet. This hip goes against the wall. That's a difficult one to do. Especially it's difficult for men. Women can do it a lot better. Then, of course, another one for a sciatica is going into the wall just as we did for the feet. Just brace yourself against the wall in this way and just lean into the wall, keeping the heels flat on the floor. That is important. Yes? All right. If it's in a flare and the person is just disabled with it, there are two ways to treat it. One is with hot alternating cold soaks. That's one. Then another is ice to the area. If it's so painful that they can't walk with it, then you may need to have them lie in bed on pillows. Let them lie for an hour in the bed on pillows with the feet out, with the feet and legs extended. Then as the pain stops and comes up so that it's only in the hips, then you start removing pillows, because you want to get them so that they can arch the back like this. And when they can arch the back like this in bed, you will want to get to the place where you're putting pillows here and here, and the back arches like this with them lying face down. In that position, then you can do massage and do exercises, leg extension exercises, and also range of motion for the hip, whatever doesn't cause them a lot of pain. That can be very helpful for a person who has sciatica. You start out with them right under the abdomen, so that they are lying in bed like this, face down. Then as they continue to lie there, and the pain comes so that it's no longer all the way down the leg, it gets centralized. Then you start pulling pillows out, and when they're lying flat, if it still stays there, then you start, if the pain still stays there, doesn't go back down the leg when they're lying at rest, then you start putting pillows under the hips or the thighs and the chest, so that you begin to do it like this until they're extended as much as you can get them. When they're in that position and still having no pain, it is then that you start with some gentle massage just in the area, not trying to hit the sciatic nerve necessarily, but just to relax the muscles in the area. You do hot and cold soaks, alternating 3 to 6 minutes of the hot and 30 seconds of the cold, back and forth and back and forth. Or you can give a 12 to 15 minute ice massage. With a piece of ice, just rub the area with the ice. Let the water melt and run down into towels that have their, you've blocked off the area so that it has, you have a runoff zone. And that can be very helpful. 12 to 15 minutes, just the ice alone. The area should become beefy red. And all of the area that has pain, you try to include that in your massage. Just back and forth and up and down and zigzag and figure eights, and just keep it really red with the ice water. Question?
What about
women who have sciatica? You wouldn't be able to do that part of it, but you could do ice massage and the hot and cold soaks. They wouldn't be able to get on the abdomen. Then they can also do a range of motion as much as they can. And if they're at all able to do this pelvic stretching exercise with the hip against the wall, that stretches the pelvic ligament so that the sciatic nerve can come through there a lot better. Now, the next thing I'd like to talk about is heel spurs. Heel spurs are a misnomer. They are not really spurs. You know, we think of spurs as something that looks about like this, with sticks off like that. Well, these are not spurs, anything like that, but let's say this is the bottom part of the heel bone, like this. There is a little ridge there. And with a heel spur, there is a little thickening of this ridge. That's what it is, right there, just a little thickening. Not that much, not a lot, but just a little thickening. And what the person needs to do is, number one, lose weight. That every time the person walks, that will relieve them of a certain amount of trauma to the bottom of the foot. And number two, get proper shoes. Proper shoes. And proper shoes mean a protective sole. Women's shoes are not protective, are they? We need to have sturdy shoes with that protect the foot, especially if we are active. If we are out in walking, or we do a good bit of footwork, then you need to have really comfortable shoes. And those that have, you can get some canvas shoes, or you can get something like SAS shoes or Easy Spirit shoes. And those are very good for the feet. Get a good fit, and that can help you a lot with a heel spur. Then at night, the person should do a 30-minute soak in hot water. 30 minutes. If you find that it's better for you, you can alternate every 5 to 6 minutes with 30 seconds of cold water that comes from your tap. This is a very excellent treatment for heel spurs. Heel spurs don't need surgery. They should not have it. You should just correct the cause, that of improper shoes and being overweight, and then the person can again, have a good effect there. Now, the next thing is that of tennis elbow. Tennis elbow is a problem that comes when the person is doing this kind of movement with the elbow. It can be this way or it can be this way. And if a person overuses the arm, they may get a tendonitis or tennis elbow. And they have acute pain right there on this little prominence of the bone right there. They will have acute pain there, and it will usually be tender all around. They will even have tenderness down the arm right along here. You just put your fingers in the between the two bones there. They will have tenderness there. And the treatment is first and foremost not using it, and the second is stretching. So you stretch it in this way. You reach it out like this and turn it. And then when you've turned it as far as you can on its own, then you do like this. Twist it as far as you can while holding it straight. That's a very good one for the tennis elbow. Hold it straight and twist it. Then do it the opposite way. You turn it as far as you can, then reach there while holding it straight and turn it back this way. Now, if a person has tennis elbow right now, they'll be able to feel that it's stretching it right in there. Stretching it in there. They may even feel it stretching there. Then you come back here. You turn it like this, and you do the straight arm twist again. Then you turn it this way and do the straight arm twist again like that, as much as you can. Then you put it over here on the side like this, and again you do it like that. So that in every position that you can, you twist it. And with each one of these positions, you can tell that you've stretched it in a different area. That's an important part. Another part of tennis elbow is that you put a lot of heat or cold to the tennis elbow. But of course, don't forget that you must stop the action that has caused this. And I've got about 4 people who have questions right now, and I've got 6 other diseases and only about 4 more minutes. So let me cover the diseases and then I'll get your questions later. The next thing that I want to tell you about is that of crossover toes. We don't want to get the crossover toe like this. I've seen some people that had 2 toes crossed over like that. When do you start treating a person so that they don't get crossover toes? It's now, right now, today. Whatever age you are, if you're about 2 years old, so much the better. Get plenty of room in your shoes. Make your stockings so that they don't do this kind of thing to your toes. You need plenty of room with your stockings. And stockings in our day won't give. You know, when you put them on, there's only one thing that they can do, and that's draw up your toes. So before you put them on, take the heel of it and pull it way out like this. So you've got plenty of room there for your toes to stay out straight. That's good. When you walk, be sure your shoes are long enough, but not too long. If they're too long, you'll stumble. If they're not long enough, then they're going to make your toes curl like this, and pretty soon they're going to be lapping over like this. And keep your toes strong. And from time to time, give a little range of motion to your toes and a little massage to them. That can be a very great help. Now, the next thing that I'd like to talk with you about is knee pain. A lot of people have knee pain. How do they get it? How can we stop knee pain? Well, you may have a true pathology in your knee. You may have a cartilage problem, or you may have a knee imbalance, or you may have some other things wrong, actually structurally wrong there. But one thing that you can do, and it will eliminate a lot of knee pain, I would say that probably 50%, one out of every 2 people that you find who have knee pain, their problem is this, that when they stand to talk, they stand with their feet out like this. Instead of being straight in front of them, the toes should be pointed straight in front, not splayed out to the side like this. That twists the knee and puts a burden on it. Now, another thing, when people sit down, women sit down, and then as soon as they sit down, their knees drift out to the side. Men do this all the time. They sit down and their knees go out like this. Well, women do that too. They sit down and if they are seated at a sewing machine or seated at a desk, they sit there and then their knees drift out like this. That puts a strain on the knees for the knees to drift out like that. And at a desk or in a seat in such a way that the knees and the toes point straight in front of you. This will take a lot of strain off knees. Now, let's say you can't get it to do that. You sit down and your knees, just before you know it, they're out to the side and your toes are too. They're pointed out like this. then what you need to do is to get some cushions and put them, stuff them in between your thigh and the seat of your chair so that your knees have to stay pointed straight in front of you. And if your knees stay pointed straight in front of you, there's a good chance that your toes will too, just unconsciously stay pointed straight in front of you. That's a very good thing. Now let's say you've got knee pain, and the knee pain is really disabling, and you need to do something about it. Well, what you must do is to give your knee hot and cold soaks, and also you need to have compresses to the knees, and a good charcoal compress worn every night is something very good. A comfrey poultice or compress is also very good. Wear it at night, every night. Comfrey, don't sell it short. A lot of people look at comfrey and they see the poultice made and they say, I've got real knee pain, and that comfrey poultice is going to help my knee pain. They won't even put it on. Go ahead and try it. I have seen some absolutely miraculous things happen with comfrey poultices that you just couldn't believe that they would happen. How could that help my knee pain through the skin? How could that charcoal compress help my knee pain through the skin? I've got real pain. You don't understand. My pain really hurts in the knee. I'm going to need something more than that. And I hear that a lot. And sometimes when we try it, we put it on. Well, my knee didn't hurt last night. As if it just was time for it not to hurt. So go ahead and try those things that you would never think would help, and they can sometimes help. Now I want to train you how to reduce the nursemaid's elbow. You know, have you ever heard of nursemaid's elbow? Okay. Okay, well, the nursemaid elbow is that the child is going along holding on to mama's hand. Child's looking all around like this and falls off the curb, and mama jerks like this to keep the child from falling down. You know how that does, and it jerks the elbow out of joint. Well, it's a very easy thing to handle that, and would you mind being my helper? Would you just come up here and let me just show people how to reduce the nursemaid's elbow? It's a very simple thing. Now, the patient has a lot of pain, and so you can't just say to the patient, hold on, because I'm going to do this very simple little thing for you. Don't think that he will sit still for you to do that. He's not going to do that. So you have to sort of sneak up on him. You can stand up and take your your jacket off would be good. You need to know that they are not going to hold still for you. So let mama hold them while you do this. And you just take the arm and hold it out like this. Stand back just a little bit more like this. Can you see over there too? Hold it like this, and then you must put your thumb between these two bones right here. So you just put your thumb between these two bones, and then while you squeeze there, you just rotate it a little bit and pull, and it slips right back in. Thank you. So it's not a big problem to get it in. But sometimes if it's been out for half a day or a day, it takes a lot. They still have a lot of pain. And then you wonder, did it really go back in? Because they still hold it without moving it. They still cry a little bit with the pain, and you don't really know whether you've done a good job for them or not. And so you have to comfort yourself a little bit. Let them go another day and see if the pain won't go away, and usually it will. Usually you've been successful and you just haven't known. Often, if it's just happened, the pain goes away immediately. They're happy and start using the arm right away, whereas before they wouldn't let you even look at it. Well, I hope these few things about the skeleton have been helpful to you, and there's a, one of the skeletal problems that I have not covered is that of arthritis. I'd like to have a little special class on that tonight after the spiritual program with Dr. Remeister.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. Peace coming soon.